KPPPLP Fargo Moorhead 88.1 FM. Welcome to part three of Finding Me. Last week, I talked about the results of the midterm elections and an article and a little bit more about the book by Kuhar on the media representation of homosexuality. And I was in the middle of getting close to finishing chapter two of Critical Discourse Analysis. Moving forward, I'm going to finish this conclusion here. I explained last time, and you can go back, check out what that was, about the important question raised by critical discourse analysis is the question of the power governing the discourse, and etc. And the last part here is that, which I think is important in the context of online discourse and fandom and queer fandom, that talks about here that, I'll just read this previous paragraph to get us back up to speed. An important question raised by critical discourse analysis is the question of the power governing the discourse, which is primarily connected with the question of accessibility, who has access to the media and who can appear in media, and the main task of critical discourse analysis as an anti-discriminatory scientific political practice is to disclose power relations behind the discourse and implicit elements of the text. So, for example, certain instances of critical analysis in the past led to changes in textbooks that were found to contain discriminatory, sexist, or similar elements. The task of critical linguists is not only to describe, but also to explain how discourse becomes shaped through power relations and ideologies. How it influences social identity, social relations, knowledge systems, and value systems. A discourse cannot be understood and analyzed without its context, since it is not ahistorical or unchangeable in space and time. So, to apply this to a lot of the drama that happens in the Voltron fandom, for example, where there is a high population of queer folks in any portion of it, what you get is that you have the anti-shipping movement and anti-movement in general of what's considered representation, what is, and that would be like, you know, who has access to the media and who can appear in media and how is that portrayed, and how we've learned overall that we obviously don't want any more problematic representations of the queer identity, and we want better representations. And one of the things that, like, for example, bothers me about the whole representation fighting is that they pick Shiro for the representation. My problem isn't with Shiro because I think he's really good for today's time and maybe even for the future, I hope. I would think that considering how amazing it was, for example, that people who worked on Voltron also worked on Legend of Korra, where we had one of our earliest instances where we had bisexual representation between two women, that it was really cool that the one character that wasn't stereotypically a man that loved men, in the sense that it fell back on like a sassy gay trope or someone who just happens to take care of themselves hygienically, or is loud or dances a lot or whatever. I felt like it was really good for Shiro to be that representation, because you would not think he was, or at least many di some didn't, and for me and many others, we disagreed on that, but I th always thought that he was queer identifying to some extent, but I just couldn't put my finger on where, especially because he interacted with the world a certain way, and I've talked about that in the past. So, and it was not in a way that made fun of him. He wasn't like made the point of jokes. In fact, he's always raised up from his role, and he always raised higher. And you know, I've said this before, but like the executive producers have done their research and they went back and forth, and if they had planned on killing Shiro before as a character, they would have just let him die a straight guy. But in the end, they decided, okay, great, he's gonna live, so he will be our representation. And so, if anything, this became preserve your gaze for media tropes, and I thought that was really cool of them to totally turn that on its head. And let's see, what happens a lot though is that new media tries to put itself out as progressive in some way, or they like to tell you, oh yeah, we've got all these queer characters, all this queer representation, and you should just assume that everyone is queer unless I say so. And it's like, well, that's not really a way how you want to like market yourself, if that's what you're going to be boasting. But we'll see about that. I'll probably have a review for you, because it's probably going to be painful for me to watch, just so that I can say I have a fully informed opinion on it instead of just seeing clips or solely the opinions of other people who have watched the show. And if it's going to have queer representation, well, I might as well take a look at it to see what kind of queer representation, and is it my cup of tea? And if it isn't, whatever. But I'm digressing quite a bit. But I'm trying to compare, like, you know, what can appear in media, who can appear in media, why, and finding things that used to be discriminatory in some way in language, and also the current way people write things, where they make it less discriminatory and actually more realistic of people in that marginalized group without hurting them. And so here, continuing, the task of the critical linguist is not only to describe, but also to explain how discourse becomes shaped through power relations and ideologies, how it influences social identity, social relations, knowledge systems, and value systems. So, regardless of what representation is being put out, it seeks to put the idea in people's heads a certain way. And I'm not going to talk about the other show quite yet, because I haven't actually seen it, and I don't want to have the biased opinion without the information once I've actually gotten a full intake of it. And maybe or maybe not, I will record a sort of review about that as I watch it, and then just kind of like cut it down to those reactions, just so that you get the authenticity of it. And so, what I got out of the fact that they showed that Shiro had a boyfriend that he was basically breaking up with just made it so realistic to me, because he was a young adult. He wanted to be the best pilot he could be, because that's his role. And he was experiencing normal relationship issues. He was juggling the fact that not only did he have a chronic illness and he was at risk of dying very soon, because of this illness, and but he still wanted to like have to fulfill these goals of his. And like, that's really cool. Like, you know, yeah, queer people always have these goals in mind in their lives, whether it's piloting or starting any new project or anything. And it really helped, like, instead of making that queer identity like the focus, like something that's a struggle, it shouldn't be the focus in the sense that like that's all they talk about. Although that's what I did for several years, only because I was exploring myself. But Shiro is not that type of person. And also, it humanized him in such a way that not only does he experience the same thing as everyone else does, like relationship issues and breaking up and seeking his own goals, but he does it while being queer. So then I get the sense that, for at least for anyone who's watching and people at the convention watching got a sense right away, oh, this is a very intimate queer relationship and they just broke up. So that's cool. That's confirmation. Other people didn't think it was enough. But the fact that anyone thought it was enough, period, is enough. And I think that's really important to get to a general audience and less important to think about anyone who didn't think it was enough. If not, then I guess you probably need to understand what nuance is, or just find something that's a little bit more louder for you to get. Because sometimes I guess people are just not gonna get something unless it's written out for them. And that's how that influences the social identity for people watching, like, oh, I could be that too. Social relations and how they talk to other people about those things. And the knowledge systems and value systems, and so, like, now you understand what queer representation could also be. So there could be the old stuff, but there can also be the new stuff and people like Shiro out there, or even more than that, if you can imagine something more original to work with. So, and a discourse cannot be understood and analyzed without its context, since it is ahistorical or unchangeable in space and time. So, with discourse, a lot of people like to distance themselves from the Voltron Legendary Defender fandom because all they hear about is the discourse from antis, from shippers, from both sides, or they have misinformation from the anti side, just as a general thing, and especially clan ties, about what the fandom is, what a fandom isn't, what the show is, and what it isn't. And so, unless you experienced it the way I did for the past 2 years, you're not gonna get it. And you have to, get it from the source. You have to look at both sides. And I've seen more than I care to, of both sides. And to be fair, I actually started at least 3 polls minimum, but I will share links to all my polls for shipping preferences. And in fact, I might redo those polls because it was the first time I started these surveys where I wanted to see the preferences and demographic identities of people who shipped XYZ ship and why, and where are they from, what languages do they speak, what is their demographic. So I wanted to get that to see the diversity of each group, and while taking into account the cultural aspects they may be living based on those demographics and what that ship means to them, even though I might know TP something. So, in conclusion, discourse analysis attempts to rephrase the elements of the rhetorical structures incessantly recurring within a specific discourse and thus defining it. Since we are constituted as social subjects through the discourse, in this study, the CDA methodology will be used to identify the principles behind the constitution of the homosexual as a social subject, or in this particular context where we apply critical discourse analysis. Generally speaking, Shiro and Keith shippers have been the social subject. Our point of departure is the assumption that homosexuals are a discriminated group in our social space. It is precisely this assumption that makes us convinced that the application of critical discourse analysis principles to a discourse analysis of media representation of homosexuality is the most suitable approach. It's clear political goals, and through the systematic analysis of language or text, it exposes the systems used to oppress individuals within specific social structures. We will attempt to single out the elements most frequently occurring in the discourse on homosexuality, which as a discursive practice constitutes its subject, the homosexual, or a group to which he, she, they belong, as a social group of homosexuals. Now, this is a really old book, so I added my input of they for groups that fit that. However, we should point out that the horizons of our study are limited, since we have chosen to restrict ourselves to only one aspect of the constituted discursive practice, i.e., print media representations, even though the homosexual as a subject has been co-shaped by a series of other parallel and occasionally contradictory discourses. Some of these, above all, have the greatest power in terms of intertextuality and are undoubtedly reflected in the print media analyzed here. So, that is the conclusion of Chapter 2 of the Critical Discourse Analysis. So, now you understand what that is. And I'm going to tell you, because I'm recording this on the Transgender Day of Remembrance, and I'm going to put a link, I'm going to talk about this short film that was made in honor of Transgender Day of Remembrance, because we have to get back to the important topics as well, that this film was made for Transgender Day of Remembrance by Jake Graff, showing the struggles and strength of trans teens. And in this article by LGBTQ Nation, it talks about trans actor, director, and activist Jake Graff has collaborated with Mermaids and Gyres, two UK-based advocacy groups for trans and gender nonconforming youth, to create Listen, a 5-minute short film featuring young trans actors discussing challenges they face at home, school, and their personal lives. The film's actors are between ages 11 and 15 and have all personally experienced discrimination. Listen reflects their experiences, emphasizing the need to hear and support them, especially when they're silent. In the film, one girl listens as her parents argue about who caused her gender identity. One girl gets abandoned by her boyfriend and mocked by his pals. Another boy starves himself, too scared to eat in fear of the mockery he'll face in the bathroom. Another teen cries in front of the mirror, scared at how their body will change without hormone blockers. Here's the film, which I will now make sure to drop into the links area, and I'll try to embed that so you can just watch it right there on the site and give that film the support it needs. Graff, the film's writer and director, a trans man himself, said, "As a transgender man who grew up feeling lost, scared, and unheard, I am more than aware of the damage that can be done to trans children when they are not listened to during their all-important formative years." He continued, "When school life is difficult, it can often feel like there is nowhere to turn. Trans kids are constantly in media, doubted, and vilified in equal measure, and it was really important to me that they are just seen as the children that they are, as deserving of kindness and respect as anyone else." In addition to being the film's director, Graff is also an actor, recently starred in Colette, a film about the 20th century French woman battling her husband for credit over literary achievements. Graff says the increase of trans visibility in media has also spurred a backlash against trans rights. "Trans children are attacked so frequently that feel powerless to stand up and be heard. We hope this film gives a voice to all the transgender children and begins much-needed conversations about positive progress." Susie Green, CEO of Mermaids, CEO, added that she and the film's other associates hope it'll be used as a resource by schools and other organizations looking to positive affect the lives of trans people. So, and I hope that does happen too. Because I finished up my critical discourse analysis and broke that down, maybe we can look at that together and I can give it my full review and my authentic reaction, because it's such a short film. So maybe we can talk about the feelings. And in the meantime, you can also check that out when I drop it. And you can tell me what you thought about it, and I will read your comments, along with other comments that I've received in the past 2 months regarding my critical discourse analysis work in queer fandom. So thank you for listening. Thank you for watching. And you'll hear from me next week. Bye. Did you find yourself today while finding me? Feel free to send me a message. You can contact us at 701-566-0917, at Nemo Potatoes on Facebook, Twitter, or Instagram. Contact me through my contact on kppfm.com. nemo.com/finding-me on that tab, or email me at nemo@kpppfm.com. If you'd like a sneak peek to the Building of Finding Me programs in the future, consider becoming a patron at my Patreon at patreon.com/anemonefish. Follow us on Facebook at 88.1 FM Fargo Moorhead, the People's Press Project, and Mexi Dash Can. Donations to Fargo Moorhead's newest low power commercial free radio station can be made at our website on kpppfm.com/donate, and check out our underwriting opportunities at kpppfm.com/underwriting-opportunities on how you can support the first queer radio program in the Red River Valley. Thanks for tuning in. See you next month on the first Wednesday here on Finding Me.